You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about durable team leadership, traits, styles, and skills. Not necessarily in that order. We're going to talk about that. And then at the end, we're going to pull in on how a lot of what you find as a good skill to be a good leader or a team member is also a skill that is used in a relationship. First, we're going to talk about top effective leadership competencies. There were 195 global leaders who were given a survey where they were to list the top leadership competencies important for team members on leadership teams. And these top competencies, this list of, 74, were voted into the top 10, which were then distilled into five themes. Strong ethics and safety, a self-organizing team, efficient learning, nurturing growth, and finally, connection and belonging. So this is recognized globally as the top five competencies in leaders.
So how they implement this kind of...
Well, we'll break it down into each individual one.
Yeah.
Should we try?
We try.
We'll try. We'll do it. Developing strong ethics and safety. Definition and example. So strong ethics and safety is defined as creating a safe and trusting environment through high ethical standards and clear communication. Safe and trust. Trust turns out to be very high on the list of behaviors necessary for a good leadership group. Behavior examples. Fair decision making, clear expectations, transparent communication. A real-world example of that was is Satya Nadella, CEO of Microsoft, known for ethical leadership in creating a safe, inclusive company culture. So an example of that is Microsoft. And Microsoft's well-known on the world stage. I think sometimes when you have binoculars or microscopes on your operation, you really have to do this stuff also.
Yeah.
So it's besides just doing the right thing for your company, it's when you have this outside critics all the time looking at you, investors.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to be careful for the environment of all your employees.
Yeah, because now you have a lot more potential for liability. Let's go on with that a little bit more in depth. So why is ethics and safety, strong ethics and safety, so important? Neuroscience indicates that ethical leadership reduces fear responses, fostering creativity and engagement. Teams feel secure, enhancing innovation and productivity. Psychological support for this is ethical environments activate the brain's social engagement and executive functions, promoting better team performance. So there's actual psychological research that backs
behind this old technique
for strong ethics.
Yeah.
So it's not just you just do it because you want the media to give you good, they're strong and ethical, but it also promotes innovation within the company, trust within the company, well-being within the company.
Yeah.
It's positive.
Yeah, I guess also the integrity and the what you say is what you do make a trust and the people feel comfortable work in one company like that.
Yes, and your reaction, trust your reaction, that you're ethical in your reaction, that people aren't blindsided by something that happens, that they have a sense of knowing that if they do their job, do it well, that if they make a suggestion or open to a conversation, that suddenly they're not, they're treated ethically. And we'll talk more about that as well. Let's go into number two. How about self-organizing? So this is kind of like when you empower a team. So there you go, empowering employees to manage their own time and work with clear guidance. For example, delegating authority, trusting team decisions, encouraging autonomy. Real-world example is Tony Hsieh, former CEO of Zappos. He implemented a holacracy to empower self-management of employees. I think we brought up holacracy like a week or two ago, and I'm like, oh, okay, what's that? I'll have to research it.
Okay, what is that?
Do you think I looked into it?
Okay.
So let's see what it is, holacracy. And many of you may know what that is. I didn't really know much about it. But it turns out to be, it's a decentralized organizational structure where decision-making authority is distributed across self-organizing teams to increase flexibility and responsiveness, empowering employees and fostering innovation. We'll go through the definitions of it though, but what's really important when you do this is you need a good, strong role definition of the people. Mm-hmm. So they are able to have delegated authority, but it's within their role. It's within their definition of what they do. So if they are following what they do and have been given this authority, they're allowed to enact and do and make decisions without having to go to someone else. Mm-hmm. But it's always within the scope of what their definition is, their job definition.
Something called job.
Job description.
Okay.
So when you have organizational structure and you have job descriptions, and there's this whole example, I went through this looking at, well, how does a marketing department do this? So there's different people within the marketing department, and one may be the SEO person, which is the person who optimizes the search engines. And then there's somebody else who may be the person who actually develops ads, and there's someone else who does the website. Well, they all can make a decision based upon their areas of expertise. So what becomes very important mm-hmm. is that they have a definition of what they are responsible for, but that they also are skilled in those areas. Because if they are the best skilled person for their defined job, they should be making the decision. And that's the whole point of the mm-hmm. of this organization.
Two, yeah, and this is two topics. So one is your job description, the other the org chart.
The org chart, job description, and also the skills, knowledge, abilities
the
of the people.
Of the people.
Competency. Competency is very important.
Yeah.
Governance meetings. So they may have governance meetings which help them align the roles and policies with the goals. So there'll be an overarching goal of maybe the company. And then your department's policies may then be a subset of that. And then your job within your department. And so it's all intertwined. It's very, it's like gears that are all entwined. But the gears can do what they need to do in the best way that they need to do them based upon their job description, their authority, and their competency.
And this is called holacracy.
Holacracy, right. So I thought it was like a hologram or something, like where it's a virtual thing and people are separated. And in a way, maybe this has been around for a while, though. I thought this came out of the COVID, where people were remote, and so not everyone traveled as much, and so we allowed people to make decisions more remotely. But this has been around for a while. There is a focus on operational issues and project updates during the tactical meetings. And finally, transparency is very important. Open information and decision-making processes. So what's important is the process of making the decision, but not the who makes the decision. Like, meaning you can make the decision if it's within your authority, as long as you follow this process for making a decision. So it's a very defined way mm-hmm. of having an organization. So there's a lot of freedom, but there's also a lot of following rules.
Procedures.
But it's almost like if you're on a soccer team and you're a forward and you're on that front line, you have this area where you can run around and do what you need to do, and you can decide to dribble or pass, but as long as you stay in that role, you don't run back and all of a sudden cover the goal. Mm-hmm. That's the goalie, and the goalie can do these things. And you are working in that team environment depending on your job description, you are doing what you do and you have full authority.
Your competency.
And your competency, yeah. Right. Like the goalie suddenly wouldn't want to become the center, unless mm-hmm. they're really good at that too. But if your competency is using your hands and catching the ball, you don't all of a sudden want to be doing that as a forward. Oh, I got it. Can't.
Strong.
So let's see what else we have here. Self-organizing. More to it. What does the research say on this? Studies show that self-organizing teams are more productive and committed. The impact on the corporation or company, increased job satisfaction, proactive behavior, and better customer service. The psychological support for this is empowered teams experience lower stress levels and higher engagement, improving overall performance. So these international leaders who said these are the things that they thought were good things to have, so far, 2 for 2. Two of the things they suggest are two things that are really supported by research.
Okay.
Let's see what else we have here. Number 3, efficient learning. Definition and example. This might be like the learning organization. Encourage flexibility, openness to new ideas, and safe trial and error. So trial and error can increase learning. Behaviors that are examples. Admitting mistakes, fostering innovation, encouraging diverse ideas. A real world example of this is Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla and SpaceX. He promotes a culture of learning from failures and continuous improvement. Now, they've failed sometimes, haven't they?
Yeah, no, so at this point, it's interesting when I see organizations that try to hide in when they fail.
Ah.
And this is something that really you don't learn completely, okay? So if the fault is some process, so you need to do root cause analysis, I go back, and some action to prevent and monitor if this is not happen again. But if you hide it, I guess the cause is higher.
So people who are very, that don't trust their organization and are scared how their organization may react if they make a mistake, may hide the mistake, which in the long run will create more problems, where if the organization is accepting of, okay, we've delegated responsibility, you can make decisions, and you make a decision that's a mistake, let's share it, let's learn from it, let's support.
Yeah.
And let's see how we grow from it.
And you reduce the stress of the employees.
You do, and it's the system, right? It's like a Deming thing. It's mm-hmm. the system.
It's the system, not the person.
It's not the person. So let's improve the system by learning from
you
our mistakes.
Focus on the system, not the people.
Right. And it's not our mistakes. It's the mistake of the project I did
mm-hmm.
that I chose to do it this way. It's not because I ran it. It's because the process was this, that it failed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do we improve that process?
So maybe you need to figure out your skill, your competency, your training, your role and responsibility. So many
right.
stuff to figure out what happened.
So do we do it differently next time? Do we use different methods and procedures and tools?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to learn more in order mm-hmm. to first come up with the way to do it?
Yeah.
So it's all that. Very interesting. Not just, oh, change the person, get another person.
Exactly.
Because if it's the same process, same equipment, and now you've just changed the person.
Because Peter, the last guy, was amazing. So the new guy is slowly. So.
Yeah, let's just change the name of people's. Okay, you're no longer Peter, you're now Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, we're going to do it differently this time.
Okay.
So that is interesting. And then finally, the research on learning organizations, efficient learning. What's the research and impact? Flexible thinking and openness enhance learning and adaptability. Teams become more innovative and resilient to change when they can learn and adapt. Safe environments for trial and error enhance cognitive flexibility, critical for problem solving and creativity. It allows people to start to think creativity because they're looking for alternative ways of doing things because it's safe to have a trial and an error. If it's not safe to try something new because they're afraid of the repercussions, then we'll just continue to do it this way and not try something new. I'll do it the way that doesn't work because if I try a different way and it doesn't work, I may get in trouble. Whereas why didn't we do it the way we did it before even though it's not the best way?
Exactly.
Exactly. What else do we have here? We have number four, nurtures growth. Executives who nurture growth can help the organization. How do they do that? The definition of nurturing growth is committing to ongoing training and development for the next generation of leaders. For example, providing mentorship opportunities, supporting career development, sponsoring new projects. A real world example of that is Mary Barra, CEO of General Motors, who has focused on employee development and succession planning for the company and perhaps for their own role. So somebody in a role in an organization, as they're maturing in that role, should also think about, okay, if I am moving out of this role, who needs to replace me? So it's called succession planning. It's not just the owner of the company going, what do I do and how does my family take over the company? How does someone take over my role as I move myself out of the company eventually or move on to a different role?
We call the knowledge of organization, other people.
Mm-hmm. Organizational knowledge, yes it is. Yes. So what's the research and impact of nurturing growth? Ongoing training and development increases employee loyalty and performance. Higher employee retention, improved skills and leadership pipeline when you nurture growth. Psychological support for this is growth opportunities satisfy intrinsic motivation, enhancing commitment and job satisfaction from the well-known Maslow in 1943. Here we are 80 years later.
Oh my God.
And Maslow's ideas are still being supported. He's the guy with the hierarchy of human needs and many other things that he's done. Let's see, we've got one last thing left on here of the top five. Number five, connection and belonging, connecting to other people within the organization, building strong connections and a sense of belonging within the team, very important. The fifth theme that these international leaders have provided. Behavior examples, frequent open communication, team building activities, creative and supportive environments. A real world example is Howard Schultz, former CEO of Starbucks, who emphasized connection and belonging among employees and customers. And if you think of the environment of Starbucks, you may or may not like it, but there is a very, a familiar atmosphere when you go in there.
Mm-hmm.
And as these companies grow, things change, and maybe it's not how you or I would like it, or maybe it is. But the idea of having this connection through the team members and then with the customer can help out the organization. And finally, what's the research on that? That social connections at work improve emotional well-being and productivity. That's from the American Psychological Association. Impact, the enhanced teamwork will reduce turnover, and actually it will enhance teamwork, having connection, and it will increase employee satisfaction. The psychological support, belongingness activates the limbic brain, leading to better mental health and performance. You just naturally start to feel better about the job and how you are with other people because you feel connected. And innately, it makes you feel better.
So people spend many, many hours of the life
at work. So you might want to feel like you're connected to the people you work with.
Yeah.
And as a leader or as a team member, those are the things that you want to try to provide as an environment for your fellow people at work, right?
Yeah.
We all want to feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
Reach out and be connected. And when we come back, we'll talk more on 90 Day Soulmate.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about leadership, we're talking about traits, we're talking about skills. The first segment of our program, we talked about what world leaders, global leaders and companies thought were the top themes of what leaders should have in order to be good leaders in companies. And next, we're moving into what are the skills, the knowledge, the abilities that as any one of us needs to have to be able to survive the change that rapidly occurs in companies moving forward. And so let's look at that. This is a survey that was done of, and I'll get to the right slide here, of 1,300 L&D, which is Learning and Development Leadership Professionals, people who train the leaders. They looked at what does it take to thrive in a dynamic environment, and what are the 10 must-have skills and abilities as we move forward with technology and more highly, highly mobile people, like people who are working remotely, more educated society.
The information society, yeah.
Information gets around quickly. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, like with computers and with phones and with all this digital stuff, the number one thing is on their list? Oh, look at that. Digital adaptability. For example, that is the definition of the ability to effectively navigate and utilize digital tools and technologies. Example, adapting quickly to new software for project management. Benefit, increases productivity and keeps the team ahead in a fast evolving landscape. So digital adaptability was number one on the list. What happens if you lack it? Mm-hmm. Now we can talk about it, but if you lack it, here you go. Struggle with new technology, reduced efficiency, falling behind competitors, delays in project timelines due to difficulty using collaborative tools. So while your competitor is quickly having Zoom and Microsoft Teams meetings, if your people don't do it, don't know how, don't adapt it, they're not flexible enough to do it. During COVID, how many people, their companies slowed down because they didn't adapt that technology?
Yeah, I teach many people use Zoom and Teams and this stuff in meeting because...
And here we are 4 years later and they're just about to learn it.
Yeah.
Come back to the office and now they forgot how to drive their car.
Yeah. How is they open the door of the office?
So how do we learn it? Regular participate in tech training workshops, encourage trying out new digital tools, and seek guidance from tech-savvy colleagues or mentors. So this actually kind of rolls into that first group we talked about too, is that the ongoing learning, right, continuous learning, well, this is a trait that, as an employee, take advantage of.
Yeah.
And part of that is you may need to just say, hey, can you help me? Foster communication.
Yeah.
How about number two? What do we think number two is? Ooh.
That's other show completely.
Yeah, empathetic communication. The ability to understand and share the feelings of others while communicating. Actively listening to a team member's concerns. It helps build trust and strengthen team relationships. Let's go right on to what happens if you lack it. Misunderstandings and conflicts. Decreased morale and productivity, misinterpreting feedback and criticism, leading to resentment. I'm going to stop there for a minute. There is that if you don't have empathetic, and you know, if you don't listen and feel to what somebody else is saying, you then take on your own feelings without really thinking about what they're saying, and then you read into it how you are. Right. Mm-hmm. So we talked about that last show, I believe.
Yeah, last show, the mirror technique. Yeah.
So if you're not really listening to the other person and understanding what they're feeling, you will misinterpret what they're saying because the emotions are so much more powerful than words.
Yeah, and also I see people that you talking something and the people is thinking and the answer they need to say versus listen the question that you make for the person. So watch out your own process mind because also in your face you can demonstrate that you are thinking and different stuff versus the people talk.
Do you ever see somebody so angry they're just waiting to get their answer back to you and they're not listening to anything you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday where they said they were talking to the person and they were so upset that they said, calm down, we'll talk, you know, when and part of it is that you think you're helping the person out. Listen, you're angry right now. Yes, you tell somebody they're angry right now, that's not going to really help the situation.
No.
Basically, you just have to say, hey, let's get back together in a few more minutes, or let's get back together on Monday, or take your time out. But if you say something, you need to calm down. You know, that doesn't work, does it? How does that work in relationships? Lizette, you need to calm down.
No hablo inglés.
You're acting too emotionally. By the way, I never say that to Lizette.
I say that.
She says to me all the time. So misunderstanding feedback and criticism, we talked about this, is some of the things. Misunderstanding and conflicts is when you don't have the empathy. And then how do you practice it? You practice listening without interrupting. Develop an understanding of your own emotions and others. Request and act on feedback about your communication style. So sometimes learning our communication style,
mm-hmm,
and learning what you think others think about your communication style. Because you may think, oh, I'm so direct, I tell people exactly how I feel. And people are like, no, you never say anything. Oh, well, my eyes. It's in my eyes. My emotions is in my face all the time. You know, that people don't necessarily get you, right?
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily, as we talked about, you don't necessarily read people correctly either. So since we are always misreading each other, we need to really have good in-depth conversations. How about emotional and social intelligence? The ability to recognize and understand and manage our own emotions and the emotions of others. We talk about emotional intelligence so often. It's so important. Managing stress during high-pressure situations is talking people down off that cliff, off that mountain, off that balcony. Enhance decision-making and interpersonal relationships by having good emotional and social intelligence. You agree?
Yeah.
You do. So let's look at when you don't have it. You have poor emotional regulation, ineffective leadership, and team discord. You can have react angrily to setbacks, causing team anxiety. So instead of being able to communicate and openly discuss something, is by having a bad emotional response, you can shut your team down. And then you can be thinking, why aren't other people discussing this with me passionately, right?
Yeah.
And go, well, some people shut down when things get passionate. I know some people who are introverts who, even when there is no stress, they don't like talking. And when there is stress, they don't like talking even more.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some people who talk, but when they're stressed, they're like, okay, I don't want part of this. And it's part of it is your upbringing, part of it is your background, part of it's understanding your own emotions. Am I impacting someone else?
It's not easy to work with human beings.
No, it's not. We should all work with robots. In fact, that was one of the guys said, I want 64 robots and one manager. That's what I want.
Yeah, yeah. So listened this before.
You've heard it before.
Yeah.
So what can we do? We can do self-reflection, regularly assess our emotional responses, right? Our own objective analysis. Put yourself in other people's shoes to understand their perspectives, and engage in activities that improve your interpersonal skills. Part of that may just be talking more with people you work with, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're talking about a relationship, learning to talk more with your partner.
And communicate empathy, not just talk. It's just really deep conversation, listen to each other.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Conflict management, the ability to handle and resolve conflicts constructively. How about mediating a disagreement between team members? This is the number 4 skill. Maintain a harmonious and productive work environment. It would be good if you learn how to do this. What happens if you lack conflict management skills? You can escalate disputes. You can have team fragmentation and decreased performance. For example, ignoring conflicts leads to unresolved issues and resentment, not only at work, but right at home or with friends, family. That unresolved conflicts can lead to resentment and then more communication trouble. What else do we have here? We have how to acquire better conflict management. Take courses on conflict resolution. Look for neutral mediation. Try practicing being an impartial mediator, being objective, listening. Open communication. Foster an environment where issues can be openly discussed. And again, we talked about how a lot of these sound exactly like relationship skills and abilities, mm-hmm. right? That whatever we're learning here about how to talk with people at work, this is just really human communication.
Yeah.
We talked about that. Where are we now? We're number five of 10 of the skills to acquire in a dynamic environment, how to move forward and prepare for better, what is it called? The future leadership roles tomorrow. Number five is persuasion and influence. For example, the ability to convince others to take a specific course of action. Is that with coercion? Persuading stakeholders to adopt a new strategy. Benefit of doing this would be to achieve goals through collaborative effort and support. So persuasion and influence can be done many ways. Part of it's logically, part of it's emotionally. We just talked about coercion. Mm-hmm. We talked about power. So power influences this as well. But all being equal, if you're on a team where everybody is equal, then your persuasion comes down to many things, like do people feel they're being listened to before you explain why you want to do your course of action? If they don't feel listened to and they didn't have their input, then when you explain your course of action, like, well, you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some of the bad things that happen? You get lack of persuasion will be that you could have difficulty gaining buy-in by others, stalled initiatives and unmet goals, failing to secure necessary resources for a project. And finally, how can we get training on this? Enhance your verbal and nonverbal communication. Learn what drives your audience. Build trust through expertise and reliability. And we'll talk about two of those things right now. First of all, your verbal and nonverbal communication. We know that words carry only 7% of the information in a conversation when you're one-on-one with a person or in a group. Your presentation skills, your ability to clearly state what you're trying to say, your ability for your body to be congruent or in the same communication strategy. I'm being positive, I want to talk, I want to be engaging. The natural connection of your body to your words and your emotions is what can move people to listen to you and believe that you really are backing what your words are saying. Sometimes people are just sit there and talk about something and you're like, oh, they really don't believe what they're saying. If you believe what you're saying, then it should come across that way. And learning how to better communicate through your tone of voice, your body language, and your words is very important. But the last thing that we just mentioned on there was build trust through expertise and reliability. One is actually know what you're talking about. Learn the stuff, research the stuff before presenting it. And the reliability means is that you need to be consistent, show up when you're supposed to, but be consistent in how you present, what you present, and what the information is that you're giving. If one day it's this, and the next day it's that, and the third day it's this, and then you ask somebody to do a fourth thing, are they going to believe you?
Yeah.
In any case, when we come back, we're going to talk more about those 10 skills that can keep you moving forward in this dynamic environment.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about leadership skills to empower you and your organization or yourself moving forward in this dynamic environment. So number six is inclusive leadership. So the definition and example of that is leading in a way that values and leverages diversity, ensuring diverse voices are heard in meetings, which will foster innovation and broadens perspectives. And this is just not about the diversity of organizations from a standpoint of the type of people it employs, but also it has to do with the backgrounds. It has to do with the educational backgrounds, the areas of expertise. It has to do with a wide range of voices that are all important into an organization's growth and continued strength moving forward. Let's look at some of these things. For example, what happens if you're lacking?
Mm-hmm.
Lacking diversity in inclusive leadership, you can exclude diverse perspectives, which can limit creativity and potential team dissatisfaction. Homogeneous team decisions can be missing out on diverse insights. Diverse insights can sometimes bring us to some area and some solution we've never thought of before. And by limiting our thinking to a very narrow range of thinking, we can limit the opportunity for growth.
Yeah.
So we can look at training on unconscious bias. We can look for advocate for diverse hiring of backgrounds, of experience, all of that, as well as implement and uphold inclusive workplace policies to make it be more comfortable for people to share the diverse opinions as well as have diverse opinions. You may have a diverse opinion, but feel afraid to share it.
I have this feeling sometimes when I have a company that is really, really diversity. I don't find sometimes just one in U.S., one American people and seven people in different countries. And,
right.
And the environment is completely different when you are one company that maybe 90%.
More monolithic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's something that enables you to have more creative solutions as
yeah.
well as be able to draw from a vast, much deeper breadth of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So how about this next one? Calculated risk-taking. The ability to take risks that are well thought out and based on solid information. So investing in a new market after thorough research, it drives growth and innovation. So this is another skill that people need to have is being able to take risk, but calculated risk, not just like rolling the die, but knowing that I've got four fours on each of my two, you know, each of these. So the likelihood that a four is going to come up is higher than if it was just random.
Mm-hmm.
So by reducing the randomness of the outcome, reducing the risk, and you're calculating the risk, what's the reward? What's the investment? What's the potential benefit? Is by increasing your ability to take calculated risk is something an organization will want moving mm-hmm. forward, right? Because we have a lot of risks moving forward. So the lack of it is overcautious or reckless risks, that you could be overcautious and not do anything, or you could take reckless risks by not really looking at the potential for having a problem. You can also miss opportunities, or you can have significant losses depending on if you take reckless risks or if you're overcautious, avoiding new ventures entirely, or that can lead your company to stagnation, right? If you're too cautious. What else do we have there? So how do you learn to work through that? Research before making decisions. So you are taking a risk, but you're researching it first. Use scenario planning to anticipate outcomes. And if you've ever done that before, I don't know if you've done that. And analyze past failures to inform future risks. So going back to scenario planning, as you look at okay, if it fails, what's the worst thing that can happen? Because now you understand that, okay, I spend $10,000 on this new project. If it fails, I've lost $10,000 and a month of work. If successful, I've spent the $10,000, but I've gained a new market and I have a potential of $1 million of sales. And you go, okay, is it worth the potential loss, even if it's 50% potential loss, to potentially get this new market and new product?
I always recommend to have some criteria established, because risk is something that is different for everyone. So maybe you can feel, oh, high risk for lose money is 4, I say, is a 5. And then if you have some criteria established, the your no objective view can be a little more precise to identify risk.
So here's a new risk. Another risk is you come out with a new product, right? And this new product, you're not sure how successful it's going to be, and you're selling it to existing customers. So part of your risk may be, if the product fails, it's just not the cost of the product that I'm out, but now I've just ruined our reputation with customers that are buying from us already. So now you have to start looking at that risk as well. And you might say, okay, how do I calculate the risk? How do I reduce it? You know what? I'm going to do a market study. I'm going to roll it out only in a few markets. I'm going to test it. I'm going to let that go, and I'm going to do, what is it, the alpha, the beta. You know, we're going to do different levels of rollout.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're only investing a little, you're only getting a little return or a little loss, but it's a calculated risk.
Yeah.
How about strategic agility? We talked about being agile. The ability to think and act flexibly in the face of changing conditions. Quickly pivoting to a new strategy when the market shifts. Being able to work from home in the middle of COVID. Keep the organization competitive and adaptable. Keep the organization actually in business.
Mm.
Right? So sometimes you just have to completely move on the fly to doing something different because there's a situation.
Yeah.
If you have the lack of a strategic agility and flexibility, you can fall behind in dynamic environments. Sticking to a failing strategy despite market changes. So I remember an old movie. It was something to do with the wire business, I believe. And a company was buying its competitors in order to increase sales. But they were doing this in a market that was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So they get more sales that year that they bought their competitor. And they get more of the market, but they get a higher percent of the market that was getting smaller and smaller. So it was like,
ooh. Yeah,
you're basically doing something and you're not changing what you do. You're just doing more of the same thing and expecting a different result.
Exactly, sell more. There, something.
Sounds like insanity, isn't it?
I'm so passionate.
So what do we do to acquire strategic agility? Stay informed about industry trends. Practice adaptability in exercises. Regularly conduct scenario analysis to prepare for changes. You should always try. Let's just try a new market for something.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Try something. Spend a little bit on R&D. Keep R&D going. Learn a new subject yourself. So if you're looking for agility, I sure learned something about leadership skills.
Exactly.
There
like
you go.
Today.
Like today, leadership skills. Engaging in inspiring leadership. So this is another one, engaging and inspiring leadership. You want to have the ability to motivate and energize team members. You want to lead by example, showing enthusiasm for projects. Boosts team morale. This is what you do when you do that. You boost your team morale and productivity. If you don't have engaging and inspiring leadership, you can demotivate the team. You can have low performance and high turnover, as well as you can be a leader who does not acknowledge team efforts, leading to disengagement of the team. And then that old cycle of less team engagement, less productivity, and then maybe you're not inspiring, and it just continues to go down.
Yeah.
So all these things tie in together. How do you create more inspiration? Communicate a clear and compelling vision. Regularly acknowledge and celebrate team achievements. Demonstrate genuine enthusiasm for the work. And I will say that part of this is communicating, right? So the ongoing clear communication.
Yeah.
So a lot of these are tied together. Finally, number 10. How about this? Leadership without formal authority. This is something you should try to develop, is leadership without formal authority.
Mm-hmm.
Work with people, support people. How can I help you? The ability to influence and lead others without a formal leadership title. That's, you don't have to have, oh, you're the manager of. Say you're in a group and you can act as the lead or the spokesperson, or how can I help? And you basically take on a leadership role. Lead a cross-functional team project. Enhance collaboration and leverage informal networks. Well, that's the other thing, is that, okay, if you're doing a project with a bunch of people that are in all different groups, say, okay, you know what I'll do? I'll keep the notes. And then you become the person who connects with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then people go to you because, oh, I want to give you that information. And all of a sudden you find, wait, not only do I have the information, but now I know more about the whole project. Well, you know what? They want me to speak on the project to the rest of the company. So now I've taken on the role of leader by supporting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I support everyone, but now I become the conduit for all information, and now I can speak about that to the company, and I am now seen as, oh, I'm the team leader, but I was just really a support person who connected with everyone really well.
Mm-hmm. And the people feel more relaxing working like that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, you do this, you do this, you do this. Hey, how can I help you? You give me the information. I'll put the presentation together.
Yeah.
But then you learn, and being that quick learner, that agile learner.
Yeah, some can different bring it. Dynamic, yeah, in the group.
Absolutely. If you don't have leadership without formal authority, you have the inability to mobilize team efforts. You may have fragmented efforts and lack cohesion because you're not actually trying to form a team between people. You could be a team member unable to drive initiatives without a formal title. That's what could happen if you lack it. And finally, how do you get it? Well, you want to cultivate strong interpersonal relationships. You want to show expertise and reliability in your field. We just talked about that a few back, being an expert and being reliable. Influence through your actions and behaviors. So going again is that you could be on a team, but you could really become an expert in whatever that team does. Whatever you're, if you're in marketing, become an expert in marketing. If you're in engineering, an expert in engineering or in a product development. Or if you're in sales, learn as much as you can about sales. Learn how to do presentations. Do something that makes you become a relied upon part of the team. You're not putting yourself above them in a formal way, but you may be putting yourself as a relied upon resource. Mm. And because you're now valuable, you become somebody that's like maybe a mentor to others. You'll be naturally seen as a lead and a leader. And it will be an informal leader without title, but it can lead to becoming a lead with title.
Yeah.
If that's what you're looking for. Finally, I hope I helped hit the right button here. The five key takeaways of today's program are ethical leadership, which is upholding strong ethics and safety, builds trust and fosters innovation. Empowering teams, self-organizing teams enhance productivity and job satisfaction. Continuous learning, very important. Embracing flexibility in new ideas drives adaptability and growth. Growth mindset, investing in training and development nurtures future leaders for yourself and for others. Connection and belonging. Fostering a sense of belonging boosts emotional well-being and collaboration. And finally, I think we promised something here. We promised, how do these apply to a romantic relationship or a relationship with family and friends? This is how they do. Ready?
Ready.
Number one. Build trust through honesty and integrity. Communicate expectations clearly to avoid misunderstandings. So you use the same trust building. Number two, empower each other to manage personal and shared responsibilities. Encourage autonomy and support each other. Number three, this is that learning piece. Stay open to new ideas and approaches within the relationship. Learn from others and each other's mistakes. Learn from your own and each other's. Grow together. Number four, support each other's personal development and goals. Celebrate achievements. Provide constructive feedback. Communicate. Lastly, develop a strong emotional connection through regular open communication. Create belonging by being supportive and present. These seem to be parallel to what we just discussed. To be a good leader, to be a good team member, is the same as being a good partner with your romantic partner. Hope you learned something this week. We did. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.